Welcome to The Reasons We Smile with Dr. Kvitko, the show that brings you man-on-the-street interviews, celebrity guests, groundbreaking research, and heartwarming stories about the reasons we smile. Our show is also known as everything you've always wanted to know about dentistry, but we're too numb to ask. Hello, I'm General Dentist Dr. Kvitko, and thank you for joining me today.
The following views and opinions do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its staff, management, or parent company. To hear a replay of this show or one of the great shows that previously aired, log on to thereasonswesmile.com or iTunes. Keyword, Dr. Kvitko, or The Reasons We Smile. Listeners should not use Dr. Kvitko's comments and advice in place of an actual dental exam.
Brighten your life with a smile that shows the professional touch of Dr. Kvitko.
Time now for The Reasons We Smile with Dr. Kvitko. Call 459-9769 to discuss your dental issues. Now, here's your host, Dr. Kvitko.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Reasons We Smile. This is show number 420. It is part two of last week's show, which was part one of a tour of the James Cancer Hospital and Solove Research Institute with its physician-in-chief, Dr. Richard Goldberg. We're going to get to that in just a second, but before we do, let me remind you, if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, it's at Dr. Kvitko. And if you would go to my office Facebook page and like us, that would be awesome. Okay? So, because this is a jam-packed episode, I think I want to go right to the interview, the continuation of last week's interview with Dr. Richard Goldberg of the James.
And then their family, you said one member can spend the night in their room?
Right. So every one of our rooms is a single, which is a great thing. There's nothing worse than being sick with somebody else who's sick who you don't know.
I know. And then, like, their family's there and you're trying to sleep, or your family's there and they're trying to sleep.
Right. So
we don't have that here.
Every room in this building that's a patient room is a single room. And each room has a bed for the patient. It has a couch for family members. That couch folds out into a bed. It has a computer workspace.
Yeah, I noticed that over there. That's pretty neat, because the first thing I thought about is when I go to stay at a hotel, I want to know, where am I going to put my computer and hook up my, I use an air card.
Right. And then we also have a computer for access to hospital records in each room, so that I can go into a room and actually show a patient their CAT scan or pull up their pathology report and go over it with them. And we have another program called MyChart, where patients will get a laptop when they come in, or an iPad, and they can actually address questions to their nurses and their doctors through electronic communication, as well as asking them by voice.
Really? So if they just feel better just kind of typing, hey, I don't want to bother you, but I have a quick question, or it's minor, but when you get a chance, could you let me know, you know, blankety blank.
Yeah, and that often helps a lot, because often when the doctors walk in, they're there with an entourage, and people will forget what their questions are.
Yeah, you know what I do? People are very respectful, and they don't want to bother you, and yet they have questions. They won't pick up the phone to call me and say, hey, I'm just wondering, oh, you took out three teeth, I forgot what I'm supposed to do as far as eating. But we call them to see how they're feeling, and they'll say, oh, I'm feeling fine, but I do have one, now that I have you on the phone. And then they'll ask.
Yep. So we do that with MyChart for both outpatients and inpatients. Now, the next floor that I want to give you a tour of is our clinic floor. So even though this building is 21 stories tall, there's only 1.5 floors that have outpatient clinic space in them. We have other clinics in places like Martha Morehouse and the Stephanie Spielman Breast Center and out at Mill Run. And we actually have taken over some of the floors in the old James for clinical space. But on this floor, we have three kinds of cancers that are seen here in specialized areas: blood cancers like leukemia and lymphoma, head and neck cancers, and then sarcomas. Those are tumors of bones, joints, and soft tissues. And all of those require highly specialized teams of people. And our surgeons, of course, really like to be here in this building when they're seeing their patients, because the operating room is just one floor down. And if they get called to the operating room, it's easy for them to get access.
Got it. So the other facilities, the ones you mentioned, would that be somebody with a skin cancer, maybe a melanoma, they're not as sick? They will be if they don't get treatment, but they're not as sick as somebody with leukemia.
Right. So over at Martha Morehouse is where I do my GI cancer clinic. We have melanoma over there as well. So we have different places that specialize in different cancers. The breast center, of course, is totally devoted to the management of breast cancer.
Interesting. Now, because this is Ohio, although you said the state didn't build this, you guys, the university did through bonds and donations. Were the construction crews from Ohio? Did you do anything? you know, things you could do to try to keep things local?
Well, so we wanted to keep things local, but not too local. So, for example, in the patient room that you were just in, you'll notice that the bathrooms all look the same.
Right.
And the reason for that is they're actually modular. They were manufactured in Cincinnati, so a company in Cincinnati got the benefit of the contract for that. They were brought up here on semis, and a crane actually dropped them into the building. So all you had to do was connect the plumbing, and you were ready to go.
Well, just like on a cruise ship.
Right, exactly.
I did not know. That's interesting. So all the tile that I saw was on there, and all the fixtures were in place. There was just some couplings underneath, and maybe on behind the wall.
And another interesting fact is, you know, we have linear accelerators, which are the machines that give radiation here. Those get outmoded after a while, but they're huge. And we had to figure out a way of how you could exchange them. So actually, on that floor, which is the second floor of the building, there are panels on the wall that come out so that you can actually move in heavy pieces of equipment by taking a piece of the wall off and bringing a crane up to it, pulling out the heavy equipment and exchanging it.
So it's a ground level floor?
No. Two floors above ground level.
So the crane goes two floors above, and then it lowers down into the hole, which would be where this accelerator is, and it can lift out. Wow, that's so they had to have some special reinforcement steel, right?
It's an interesting story. So that we didn't originally have radiation in the building, but we got news that there was a potential $100 million grant that we could get that would allow us to put radiation in the building. And we have to give credit to Senator Sherrod Brown, who helped us obtain this grant. Probably one of the biggest change orders in the history of building a hospital, because the design of the building had already been done. And most radiation facilities are in the basement because it's easier to shield them in the basement.
Right.
But our radiation facility is up in the air, so our radiation oncologists get to see daylight, as do their patients. However, the shielding was quite an interesting innovation. Each brick, which is about 8 by 8 by 8, weighs about 60 pounds because of all of the metal that's in it to absorb the radiation.
And one would be 8 pounds, I think, a regular brick, about 8. So from 8 to 60, wow.
And each wall is about 4 to 5 feet wide to be safely shielding from radiation escaping.
That's a lot of wasted space, but very necessary.
Right. And interestingly enough, our building's actually in the floodplain of the Olentangy, and it's built into a big bathtub to correct it. They had actually worried that the building might be buoyant if there was a big flood, but after putting the radiation bricks in, that's not a worry anymore.
Seriously, that helped with the stabilizing.
Yes.
I wonder how much, so 60 pounds per brick. Oh my goodness, I can't even do that math, but lots of tons.
Yes.
That's really awesome. And that grant, it was $100 million to put the...
It was. It was earmarked for Connecticut, but we managed to wrestle it away. So not only are people from Ohio State reviled in Michigan, but we have to be careful in Connecticut, too.
Okay. Now tell me, where do you get these people? Where do you get... I mean, no, you were headhunted. Somebody came and convinced you to leave North Carolina, University of North Carolina. And by the way, we talked about the largest is MD Anderson, OSU James is the third. Who's second? Is it the last one that you were at?
So no, it's Sloan Kettering.
Oh, okay.
Where Dr. James went to do some of his training and brought the notion of having a cancer hospital in Ohio back with him.
So then somebody in the administration said, we need to find the best GI cancer physician who also knows how to open up a hospital. And you were it, right?
Well, so Dr. Caligiuri is very good at recruiting. And
he's the CEO, right?
The CEO and the head of the cancer center. And part of what makes him good at recruiting is his personality, but another part of what makes him good is the resources here. Now, many of you have heard of or donated to or ridden in Pelotonia. Part of what attracted me here was resources that came from Pelotonia that I was able to take advantage of to start my research program.
So rather than having to apply for grants and you have to, it's almost like you have to apply for 10 just to get 2 and you don't know if you're going to get it and when you're going to get it, there's always this chasing the money. But what you're saying is we have a mechanism right here in Columbus that means that you knew, and in fact, you would be funded.
That's right. And so when I came, I didn't have funding. I left the funding that I had at the University of North Carolina, but I got the seed money, and that's now translated into federal grants and into foundation grants. So that money helped me jumpstart my research when I moved.
Okay. And so, but now that's your job to make sure that we have all of the skilled, experienced professionals that we need. And how do you do that?
Well, so one of the things we do is we bring them to Columbus and we show them the new James.
That's the biggest draw, huh?
So, you know, it's a dazzling building, and there are very few like it in the country. Ours is the newest, biggest, and most technologically sophisticated of the cancer hospitals of this size. So that's one thing. Two is the reputation. reputation of Ohio State. Three is the support that it has in the community, as evidenced by the gracious giving into Pelotonian and other bits of philanthropy that are here. And that's led to the Ohio State Cancer Center having a very strong reputation and being able to attract the best and brightest from around the country and around the world.
What about keeping the people you have on staff? Is that also a challenge because other places are trying to kind of poach?
So that's absolutely true. And one of my favorite sayings is that if you don't recruit the people that work for you, someone else will.
Okay. Oh, so you have to keep recruiting even once they're here.
Right. So we really have to be aware of the fact that the quality of physicians that we attract here are attractive to other places as well. And so being sure that they have the environment that they need to do their clinical work and their research work and their education work is critical.
Tell me about Dr. Bird, because off the air we were talking about a new drug that he helped develop.
You know what? Don't tell me about him yet. Let's save that till after the break. We're going to be going to Dr. Kavitko's question of the day here soon. So you may want to remember that Pelotonia was actually partially responsible for Dr. Richard Goldberg leaving UNC Charlotte and coming to the James through money that is raised and donated for cancer research. All right, but before we do, we'd like you to listen to this.
This station will not be held liable for any contesting during The Reasons We Smile with Dr. Kavitko. Participation in the contest allows Dr. Kavitko to record and broadcast your name and call. One winner per household. Prizes are non-transferable, cannot be substituted, and are subject to taxes and fees. This station cannot be responsible for the inability to enter the contest, whether due to equipment malfunction or telephone difficulties. All decisions of Dr. Kavitko concerning this contest or eligibility are final.
And now it's time for Dr. Kavitko's question of the day.
All right, today we are bringing you part two of a behind-the-scenes tour of the James Cancer Hospital and Solove Research Institute with its physician-in-chief, Dr. Richard Goldberg. 4 years ago, Dr. Goldberg was enticed to leave UNC Charlotte and come to the James. How did Pelotonia play a role in his decision? Was it A, Dr. Goldberg likes to ride bikes? B, money raised by Pelotonia and given to the James was earmarked as seed money for Dr. Goldberg to continue the research he had underway in North Carolina? Or C, it had no bearing on his decision? All right, the winner receives free flowers from Weistenberg Florist. They'll be delivered to your place of business this Tuesday afternoon. The number to call, 459-9769. That's 459-9769. So go ahead and call now.
Stay tuned to Dr. Kavitko.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kavitko, general dentist and host of The Reasons We Smile radio and roadshow. Did you know that you no longer need to visit several different dental professionals to get more complete dental care? We handle everything from cleanings and orthodontics to restoration, implants, and smile makeovers, all in my office. And now we have two locations. Get the most advanced technology and procedures available today. It's more complete dentistry.
Visit worldsmostinterestingdentist.com for more info about Dr. Kavitko.
Hi, my name's Athena. My family and I have been patients of Dr. Kavitko and Associates for over 10 years. We've gone to Dr. Kavitko for numerous reasons, especially cleanings, crowns, and root canals. Since going to Dr. Kavitko, I get compliments every day on how beautiful my smile is, and people always ask me how I get my teeth so white. I used to be afraid of the dentist, but Dr. Kavitko and his staff make you feel very comfortable and relaxed, and I'm not afraid anymore. I would recommend Dr. Kavitko for all your family's dental needs.
Call Dr. Kavitko and Associates today, 614-262-9588.
Hi, this is Richard Simmons. Dr. Kavitko's here, and he's going to help you with all of your problems. Are your teeth yellow? He can fix that. Are you missing a tooth? He can put a new one in. How is that?
That's very good. Thank you, Richard.
Hi, I'm Johanna, and I've been a dental patient at Dr. Kavitko and Associates for over 10 years. I would really recommend Dr. Kavitko for your family's dental care. They're friendly. They're always there to help me. I feel like family when I walk in the door. It's clean. It's comfortable. Even if I have to bring my kids, they have a great playroom for them. I know when I'm with Dr. Kavitko, they are taking that extra time to make sure that I'm going to be the healthiest I can be. They've been great. I love them.
Call Dr. Kavitko and Associates today, 614-262-9588.
I'm gonna love you with the hands that show me your teeth. Tell me when. Show me your teeth.
Open your mouth, boy.
Show me your teeth.
Show me what you got.
Show me your teeth.
Teeth, teeth, teeth.
Got no salvation.
All right, we're back. I'm Dr. Kvitko. This is The Reasons We Smile. We are doing Dr. Kvitko's Question of the Day, and we have four callers on the line. We have Joanne, James, Ruth, and Willie. And while we were at break, I rolled some dice, and it came up with the number one caller, which was Ruth. Hey, Ruth, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Do you have the answer to today's question of the day?
Yes, my answer was B.
Which is seed money for Dr. Goldberg came from money that was raised by Pelotonia. Isn't that cool?
Yes.
Yeah, that's really neat. Ruth, what do you do for a living?
I work at Verizon Wireless in their technical support.
Oh, wow.
However, I'm currently pursuing a degree as a RN.
Oh, wow. Okay, so this is of interest to you. Maybe you'll wind up at the James.
That would be amazing. I took a really strong interest in breast cancer awareness after my grandmother had it. You know, she survived. Unfortunately, she ended up with pancreatic cancer. So all of the work that they're doing is definitely something that's really near and dear to my heart. So I've enjoyed every moment of the broadcast.
Well, that's awesome. And stay tuned then, okay?
Yes, thank you.
All right. Okay, so in fact, let's go back to the interview with Dr. Richard Goldberg, physician in chief.
So Dr. Bird is one of our superstars. John Bird grew up in Arkansas, ended up in Ohio. He specializes in leukemia. He has a laboratory where he does experiments to help understand how to use drugs in leukemia. And he, along with some Pelotonia money, helped to develop a new drug called ibrutinib, which was recently approved by the FDA for treatment of chronic lymphocytic leukemia. And it's really been a game changer. Virtually everybody with leukemia who gets this drug goes into remission.
Really? And they stay that way?
They stay that way, although the drug's only been around for a couple of years, and so we don't know whether they'll stay that way forever or just for a time.
For now, they take the drug every day?
They take the drug every day. It doesn't have a lot of side effects, and it's been a game changer. It's now being used all across the world. And in fact, Dr. Bird is now working with a cousin of ibrutinib that appears to be even more effective than ibrutinib itself.
That he developed?
That he is developing in collaboration with pharmaceutical companies.
Okay. So obviously he's one you would want to keep. Of course, all of the talented people you have here you want to keep. But when he develops something like that, and you guys are doing these clinical trials, do you get a little bit of leeway from the FDA that says, hey, you guys have this wonderful facility, all these smart people, we're going to let you do clinical trials on humans, maybe break a few rules or not?
So the rules are incredibly tight, and we have a huge clinical research cadre of workers, 130 people that work in our clinical trials office, to help us do all the regulatory requirements for drugs, to be sure that we're dispensing them and storing them properly, to be sure that we collect all the information that's necessary to understand how the drugs are working. Let me show you the clinical trials unit, which is a specialized unit for people that are on experimental drugs. And one of the things that happens when we're first using drugs is we need to understand how the body disposes of the drug. So in this facility, we have laboratories that can process biological samples like blood or urine to see where the drug is going and how quickly it's broken down.
And the reason is it could build up in the body and become toxic levels, correct? So you have to know that it's somehow being broken down into its parts and eliminated.
Absolutely, and we want to know how quickly it's broken down because that helps us decide whether you dose it every 4 hours or every 4 weeks.
That's right. There's no instruction manual. You guys are developing this, so it's not in the PDR yet. It will be once you're done.
And the FDA is very strict in regulating this. So we get audits all the time where FDA officials will come here and confirm that what we're saying is true really is true and that we're following the best practices in managing these drugs.
Wow. So now I've always wondered, because the government has all of these agencies, the FAA, the FCC, the FDA, and they have to have some really smart people because they're dealing with some really, really smart people, and they're supposed to kind of make sure they're doing everything right, which means they also have to be really bright themselves. So what causes somebody to want to work for the FDA instead of, say, here at the James?
Well, it's interesting. The person who's the FDA Commissioner for Oncologic Drugs is a personal friend and colleague of mine. His name is Rick Pazder. He was a GI oncologist at MD Anderson for many years before he went to the FDA. So he's somebody who's done clinical research, who's sat with patients and confronted their illnesses with them, and he understands the importance of doing good quality research, but also of getting drugs to meet unmet needs in cancer care. And so having somebody like him as a partner in the regulatory side who feels the same pressures that I do on the care side is really important. And many of the people that work in the FDA have come out out of clinical medicine into regulation in hopes that they can help patients get access to drugs.
Is this something they kind of do when they're slowing down in retirement because of the rigors of doing the clinical practice, or just
not
a change?
Not necessarily. They're people of all ages. So Dr. Pazder's been there, I think, for 10 or 12 years. He would have been around 50 at the time that he made this choice.
Really? Age 50? That's young.
Yep.
Interesting. Okay. And so because you know him, does it make it any easier, or is he harder on you because you know him?
Well, I would say that he doesn't pay attention to the fact that we're friends when he comes to audit the work that we're doing.
Kind of like the State Dental Board. They're nice people, but they're not there to be our friends.
Right. And they shouldn't be.
Right. Because they look out for the public at large, not for us.
Right.
Very neat. So any other interesting tidbits or anything that maybe most of us wouldn't know? You talked about your mortgage. That's amazing. $53 million. And that you have, what, 72 rooms ready to go if you can raise, is it $35 million?
Right. So either raise it or sell bonds to raise it to finish the hospital out. And we need to do that because we do have demand for these patients. The other thing I would say is the greatest strength of this building is the people that work in it. And everybody that comes here is passionately devoted to the care of cancer patients and their families, to trying to find advances in treating cancers, and are really devoting their lives to it. So it's something that over the 35 years I've been an oncologist, I've seen change dramatically. When I first started in colorectal cancer, we had one drug. Now we have 12 drugs. People live 6 months back then if they had advanced colon cancer. Now they're living an average of 30 months, and we're curing many people that never would have been thought to be curable when I was first starting out. And that's just in colon cancer. Advances in leukemia and lymphoma and breast cancer have also been staggering. It's been a great time to be somebody doing cancer medicine over the last 30 years, and I can't imagine what the physician-in-chief in 30 years will be presiding over with all the advances that will happen between now and then.
Yeah, it used to be if you got cancer, people looked at you funny because they knew you were going to die
right, pretty
quickly. And now we do think of it as a curable disease. You guys have done an awesome job of that. Would you say that it's essentially a curable disease?
Well, so cancer isn't really one disease. It's a number of different diseases, and there probably isn't any one cure for the disease. But we keep finding new ways to attack the disease, some of which are very specific and can put people under remission in ways that we never thought possible before, like ibrutinib, as we discussed.
Okay. Well, Dr. Goldberg, thank you so much for your time. This is awesome. This is really cool to be able to see this firsthand and all the wonderful work that you guys are doing here. I hope I never need you as a patient, but if I do, it's awesome to know that this is here.
Well, and that's what we're here for, is to be a resource to people in the community who unfortunately get afflicted with this disease. It's a disease that generally affects us as we get older. If we don't die of heart disease, we have to get something.
Well, that's true, and I was thinking, so what types of cancers are the ones that are most survivable? Which ones are maybe less likely that we can survive? And then lastly, before I forget, and we can ask it again later, but you mentioned that a patient can check themselves in. They can make an appointment. And so I would like to talk a little bit about that. But yeah, about the different cancers. And by the way, the other thing is environmental. We didn't used to have all. People didn't get cancer like this. Have we figured out what part of our environment it is that's causing the cancers?
Actually, I think what we're going to do is we're going to go to a break. And when we come back, we will get Dr. Goldberg's answer.
This is Clark Kellogg. Stay tuned for more of Dr. Kvitko.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kvitko, general dentist and host of The Reasons We Smile radio and roadshow. I've been honored to help several famous people get a perfect smile, like Keith Carlos and Dominique Rygaard from America's Next Top Model, and Ted the Golden Voice Williams from right here in Columbus. Isn't it time you had a celebrity smile? It costs less than you might think, and most of the time, it can be done in one visit. A new smile can make a world of difference.
Visit worldsmostinterestingdentist.com for more info about Dr. Kvitko.
Estás escuchando con Dr. Kvitko aquí en su sesión favorita.
Hi, I'm Dominique Rygaard. Like what you hear? Why not use the show to promote your product or service by becoming a sponsor? Call 614-262-9588 to learn how. That's 614-262-9588. Call now.
I'm Grandpa, and I go to Dr. Kvitko, and I still have all my teeth. Real ones. Where's my glasses?
I know I asked you a lot of questions at once, but...
So let me start and say that cancer isn't just one disease. It's many different diseases. Some of it is genetic. Some of it is environmental. There are patients that I see that have an inherited predisposition to colon cancer called Lynch syndrome. 85% of them will have colon cancer by the time they're 50. There are other patients that have no family members with colon cancer and develop it anyway.
Wow.
And part of what we know about that is that sedentary lifestyle, high-fat diet, not getting your colonoscopy for screening are all things that contribute to colon cancer. We know that smoking contributes to many cancers. Sunlight contributes to melanoma. There are all kinds of environmental things that we can take control of that can help us reduce our chances of getting cancer.
But weren't people out in the sun in the 1700s and 1800s, too?
They were, and you should see some of the horrific pictures of the tumor.
Okay. Okay, point taken.
But, you know, it's interesting. You asked, well, what tumors are particularly resistant? And our notion of that is changing. So I'll give you an example. President Carter now has melanoma.
Right. Wait, we used to think that was the end of all.
Right. And just in the last 2 years, immune therapy for melanoma has completely changed the prognosis. And you've probably heard that President Carter reported that he's cancer-free after taking a new immune stimulant drug called pembrolizumab. Now, we've experimented with pembrolizumab here, and in those patients with Lynch syndrome that I talked about, the inherited colon cancer predisposition who developed colon cancer, the drug has been incredibly effective.
Wow, that's great. Where was that developed?
Well, so it was developed by Merck, which is a company, but there are many other companies that are working on cousins of that, and all of them are looking very promising.
Just have to hope they make it affordable.
So that is a big issue. The cost of cancer drugs is in the news all the time. The drugs have gotten very expensive. At some point or other, like happens in countries in Europe, we are going to have to consider how much money we can afford to spend on individual cancer drugs, and that's an issue really that the government is going to have to step into, I believe, in order to help manage our healthcare dollars effectively.
Either setting a percentage over which the drug companies can earn a profit and saying, okay, we want you to make your money back, but not at this rate, so that if it costs you $500 million to develop the drug, they need to have a way of recovering that, but not all in the first year.
Right. So that's a bigger issue than I know how to confront, but it's certainly an issue for all of us.
Right. Because if it's kind of sad if there's a drug that can save your life, but you can't afford it. It's what's the use of having it, you know? So, and then people can check themselves in. So who would somebody be that would check themselves in? You said they can call and make an appointment. And who would do that and why and what number would they call?
Well, so you can look the James up and find our number online. And you can call and make an appointment for yourself. You don't have to be physician referred. People can come to the emergency room if they have cancer or suspect that they have cancer and be evaluated there. We do have an open door policy. We're here to serve Ohio and beyond to try and help people manage this disease.
That's very interesting. I did not know that somebody could just make an appointment themselves. And so I'm assuming that you guys listening are happy to hear that. So if you have a lesion, you don't have a physician, you think there's something wrong, you can just call up and arrange to be seen, and they'll receive the same evaluation they might have had they gone to their physician, right?
Right.
Maybe better.
So, you know, we even have recently started a diagnostic hospital service for patients that are suspected to have cancer, but we don't know what it is or where it started, so that we can help those patients get diagnosed and then triage them to the appropriate specialist.
Wow, so you can be the starting point, not just the end point.
Right.
Well, you're going to fill up those 72 rooms even faster then, aren't you? Okay, well, Dr. Goldberg, thank you so much. This is very awesome. And like I said, I hope I don't need you guys, but I sure am glad you're here. And what I'll do is I'm going to look up the phone number so that I can read it out on the air when we do this. Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Okay, thanks for the opportunity to talk to you today.
And that number is 1-800-293-5066. That's 1-800-293-5066. All right, that's all the time we have today. Next week will be episode number 421, so be sure to tune in. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at Dr. Kvitko and visit my office Facebook page, Dr. Kvitko and Associates, and like us. Be sure to join me next Sunday and every Sunday morning right here on your favorite station. Goodbye.
Before we leave, let me tell y'all a little something. Before we leave, let me tell y'all a little something.
This is Carly Red from Love & Hip Hop Atlanta, the hit show on VH1. urging you to tune in next week with my dentist, Dr. Kavitko.
If you're interested in learning more about this and other dental health topics, go to thereasonswesmile.com to access full episodes of Dr. Kavitko's show.
If you'd like Dr. Kavitko, the world's most interesting dentist, to speak at your next event, please call 614-262-9588. That's 614-262-9588, or send an email to speaking@thereasonswesmile.com.